then automatically have that become part of our rule if we're talking about things that supersede one another. My understanding, though, is that if the Commission for the Blind were working with a client who is a non-citizen who is qualified to work, that that would not mean necessarily that that person couldn't be having some kind of an agreement in terms of having a small business plan of some kind in the individualized plan for employment.
This is Pearl. That is correct. We do serve clients who are legally authorized to work in this country, regardless of citizenship, and we would just, you know, if they wanted to do a job that was similar to what a blind vendor does, you know, then we'd look at options and work with them on an outcome that was a small business, but it wouldn't be the blind vendor program, which is dictated by all those, the laws of Randolph-Shepard. So yes, we definitely would work with that individual on their chosen employment goals, and it's just that they can't be the blind vendor in the BE program.
And we just don't have options at this point. That's a federal law, so that's what it has to be.
That's right. That's what I've been told. Mm-hmm.
Okay, does anybody on the commission board have any other comments on that particular section? Does anybody not on the commission board have anything to say about that? Okay, are we prepared to vote?
Yeah. Did you want to vote on each item?
We so far have been, just to make it easy on ourselves.
Okay. I thought Dorothy just indicated yes.
Yeah, she did. That's fine.
Somebody making a motion? Was that a motion, Dorothy?
I thought Bill had already made a motion, but I'll make a motion that we accept that portion of the rule as read.
Had you made a motion, Bill? I'm sorry.
No, I just said we had no options.
All right. Could I just, there is one more part of that particular section, and if the language is going to be like that, I'd like to get that other thing in before.
Oh, okay.
Is that all right? Okay. 3.01D currently reads, if the vending facility is on non-federal property at least 19 years of age, that is as a requirement for licensing, and the federal people wrote back and said, why do you have that? And I also talked with our BE administrator, Terry Harris, and the Randolph-Shepard Act just requires age 18, and all other states have 18 as a requirement for being a vendor, and the way this reads, we would allow you to be a vendor in a federal building at age 19, at age 18, but for a non-federal building, you would have to be 19. So it seems to make the most sense just to change that one and just say at least 18 years of age.
Okay, I remember when we had discussion about this at our November meeting that our concern was that we not be approving, minors, because we didn't think that that was what the Randolph-Shepard Act intended, and that was why, since people are minors in Nebraska until they're 19, that's why we did that.
But the way this reads, we would allow an 18-year-old to be a vendor on federal property. We only have it, we say, if the vending facility is on non-federal property, at least 19.
Yeah, because we thought that that was a requirement of Nebraska law, and it wouldn't be a requirement of federal law. So that's why we did it. Whether we needed to do it or not, I don't know.
We have a comment in North Platte.
Okay.
In Nebraska, you can't sign a contract as a minor, and you sign a contract to be a vendor.
Pearl?
So, well then, then the question would be, how can we have an 18-year-old sign a contract to be on federal property?
Well, they can sign a contract for necessities. And so if a job's a necessity, I would...
I would say a job is a necessity. Mm-hmm. So, Bill, do you want to state what you just said?
Well, minors, although they cannot sign general contracts, they can sign contracts for necessities of life. And employment is a job is the necessity of life. So they would be able to sign, I believe they'd be able to sign those kind of contracts legally.
Okay, so do we want to...
No longer
want
to...
Go ahead.
Are you no longer a minor when you're 18 or 19?
Bill?
Well, legally in Nebraska, as far as that's concerned, but although you're not a minor under 19, you can still sign contracts for necessity. You can sign a contract when you're 16 for necessity if you have to. At least that's my interpretation. Maybe Bob has a different.
I think the definition of necessity, though, if you're a vendor signing contracts with other parties, I think that might stretch the definition of necessity. I don't know all the different contracts that a vendor has to sign with the suppliers. But I think that might go beyond the necessity.
It could.
Yeah. Contractual obligation.
This is Pearl. I have a question. Could it be that Nebraska is the only state in the nation that has that age majority is 19 and every single other state is 18? Because I do know that every other state allows as their requirement for licensing at least 18 years of age. That I know. So
at one time, Nebraska, there was only two states. And I think the other one was Alabama, and they might have changed. But it is a very small circle that has this. Nebraska may be the only one left, but at one time, recently, there was only two states, so it's either two or we're alone.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. I think we either, I mean, it just seems so inconsistent if we would allow an 18-year-old in Nebraska to be a vendor at the, you know, the federal building, but not at the state building. So I guess I think we should either have it be 19 period or 18 period.
Well, I'm not sure we could have it be 19 period because I think that that would again cause us to have a breach with the Randolph Shepherd Act, and so I don't think we could probably do that. And I don't know whether we can, I don't know whether this is a thing we can, inconsistent though it is, that we have the authority to mess with. I don't know.
I don't think we do. I think the Randolph Shepherd, that's the law, regardless of what they do on the state level, unfortunately, in a lot of respects. But that that governs vending facilities. And I don't think the state of Nebraska can change that. I think we're stuck with it, actually.
Doesn't the attorney... Carlos Bobbers, doesn't the Attorney General's office review this after we, is that one of the next steps?
That is a step after we do the public hearing, which there's a number of things prior to the public hearing that we have to do. Then it goes to the Attorney General's office and then the Governor and Secretary of State. But if they find an error that is substantive, which this would definitely be, then we have to start the whole process over.
Is there a way of finding out from them informally what we ought to do and having us make a motion that says we need to stay within Nebraska law or something to that effect?
I could sure try to get a determination. You know, I think if we asked a clear enough question that was specific, like this one is, that they would answer.
Well, I'm feeling like we have two potential motions. I'm wondering if we should deal with Dorothy's motion about the citizen thing as a separate thing, and then deal with this. Does that seem reasonable to everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll call the question on the striking the language about non-citizens. All in favor of doing that, say aye.
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 Okay. That's unanimous then. Okay, now we're back to what we want to do about this. Do we want to have the question raised with the Attorney General and then write our language accordingly? Because we really don't, I mean, if we need to do it one way, then that's, I mean, these are laws that go beyond any decisions that we have to make or can make. So do we want to leave it that way, that if we have to do it at 19 in Nebraska, we will? If that isn't a problem, we'll strike this? Does anybody want to make that kind of a motion?
Question.
Just a minute here. Hello?
Question? Or?
Okay. I'm not hearing any motions right off the bat here. Was I too vague, or you just want to reword it, or what?
The motion. I make a motion that the age for federal be 18, and that the age for state be 18, unless it's found that we have to use 19 to comply with Nebraska law.
I would second that.
Okay. Is there discussion, Bob? Was what you were saying discussion for that?
I think the motion is fine. I just have a question regarding, you know, any change that might occur as a result of what the Attorney General says. You know, if the Attorney General comes back and says that we need to have a uniform 18 age standard because of the Randolph-Shepard Act, would it be possible to make that change before the public hearing? Because otherwise, you know, I'm just concerned about just having to start the process all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we hope it will. That's why we want to do it this way rather than make it 18 now and then discover that they don't like that, and we have to put 19 in there.
Okay.
What we're hoping for is to get an answer before the public hearing so that we don't have to start over again.
And so long as that happens before the public hearing, then that'll be okay. Okay.
Is there further discussion? Colin, excuse me?
Everybody, we had a vendor. And that one in the federal building, we had one in the city county building. And I had offered, they probably where, okay.
Excuse me, Napoleon, you're breaking up. We can't hear you well. If you can.
Where an office would require you to wear a badge and we divert, go on out there for divert 30 days to do with your permanent bag, then you have to be escorted.
That's a good point. This is talking about legal age.
Yeah, how old they were.
I think his mic is cut.
And her husband had her.
I did say how old they were.
And the parents went to work.
But how old they were that was working at that time?
They were old enough to, they were in there 30 to 40.
Then that wouldn't be, thank you for the comment, but that wouldn't be relevant to this, because we're only talking about 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds. So, thank you for the comment. I think that particular thing, though, isn't germane to what we're talking about. Okay, is there any other discussion? If not, we will vote on the motion. All those commissioners in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. I counted everyone, so there's no need to call for opposition. Okay, thank you. Okay, do you have another item, Pearl?
Did the citizen... Okay, we got that one approved, and then this
yes.
one, I'll write the letter to the Attorney General. Thank you. Yes, I have more. 00601. This is a minor change. This will be a little possibly comic relief after the last discussion.
That's on the composition of the committee?
Yes. It currently says representative of vendor population in terms of such factors as geography, sex, and vending facility type. Well, I would just recommend we change sex to gender.
Yeah.
Once again, checking to see if everybody's awake. So, that's that one. 0608 is quorum and bylaws. The current reading says that the quorum shall consist of 3 members of the committee. We're talking about the blind vendor committee here. And as of the November meeting, we made a change in the composition of the committee to allow it to be, instead of 5 members, to be a minimum of 5 members. The idea being if the program grows and you get to have 50 vendors and only 5 are on the committee, that's not really representative. So we changed that minimum of 5 members, but we did not change what quorum was. And so I suggest we change it from 3 to, quote, a simple majority, end quote, just for consistency. Okay.
Does anyone have any problems with that?
No.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. 010.01, this is notification to all blind vendors. And this is within the section of transfers and promotion of vendors. Currently, it says, whenever a new facility is to be established or a vacancy occurs in an existing facility or the state licensing agency determines that no blind person is in need of employment, as provided in 003.03, the state licensing agency shall notify all blind vendors in a reasonable time of the opening. Well, we're recommending that it read as follows. Whenever a new facility is to be established or a vacancy occurs in an existing facility, the state licensing agency shall notify all blind vendors in a reasonable time of opening. Then the next section deals with allowing how the vendors bid for the openings. The current practice is that when there's an opening, we take it to the committee and to all the vendors to see if anyone wants to bid on it. This allows for promotion within the program. If the people who are not vendors get first stab at the new sites, then the people who are currently vendors don't have the opportunity to move to the better, better income producing sites or facilities. And so, in fact, the way we do it now is the way I was suggesting it be read, and not the way that's in there. Did that make sense? Or do you have any comments or questions?
Now, you struck the language about the state licensing agency determines that
no blind person is in need of it. Right. And the other thing I want to say is that there would never be a time when there's no blind person in need of employment. So, to me, that just really makes it less clear.
Okay, so does anybody have a problem with changing that?
Nope.
No.
Okay, I believe I heard Bill, and I think I heard Dorothy and Bob.
I don't think we should change it either.
I'm sorry.
No, you don't think we should change it, or you think we should change it to leave out that business about the no blind person is in need of employment?
I think we should change it. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Did you need to vote on that one before I go on, or did that do the vote in effect?
That took care of it.
I think that took care of it.
Okay. Thank you. Next is 012.01. which has to do with evidentiary hearings and arbitration of vendor complaints. The current language allows for the executive director of the commission to preside over the hearing of the person who has a complaint against the commission. And that is not allowed within, and it doesn't make much sense either. So I'm proposing the language be like this. Any blind vendor who feels aggrieved by an action of the state licensing agency directly affecting him/her may file a grievance either in writing or in other format with the executive director of the state licensing agency for a full evidentiary hearing before an individual or panel comprised of one designee of the SLA executive director and one designee of the grievant and one neutral party agreed upon by both. If you want me to read what I took out, I'll be happy to do that.
Isn't that what already happens, actually?
Well, we haven't had a hearing in a long time,
but, I mean, isn't that the language that has been...
No.
No, okay.
We took out about three lines.
Oh, I didn't mean the language that was currently in the rule. I just meant the language that we would... the type of thing that would currently happen
if
something did happen.
That is what would happen.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why we changed it.
So that, makes sense. Because if the blind vendor is dissatisfied with the decision rendered by the executive director of the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired, he, she may file a grievance with, that's the part that we're getting rid of.
Yes. And then right after that where it says full evidentiary hearing before, now it says before the executive director or an individual or panel comprised of the designees.
Okay. Okay.
The only question I have, where it says in writing or some other format. Now, we just went over that previous rule that a grievance had to be in writing.
Right.
You want to make that consistent with the other thing that I raised earlier?
Yeah, this one actually... This one came from, this is the only area that the state had rule in before. So some of this language is from the, you know, it's been around for a long time. And that's something that we just never really caught before. But I think, I mean, and really, what does that mean? A grievance either in writing or some other format. Well, how do I, you know, I don't think we should have that. But it never occurred to me till the discussion tonight. I think it makes sense to change to file a grievance
in writing,
period.
In writing. Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that means sign language.
Yeah, or a rock with yeah. something wrapped around it.
Now we're getting back to the carrier pigeon.
Yeah.
Okay, does anybody have a problem with changing that the language in all of those ways?
No.
We have a comment in North Platte.
Okay.
I think the object in both of these places we're laboring with is to have the complaint in a statement. When we say in writing, we want a statement of the complaint,
right,
so that it's condensed, so that it's clear, so that the commission knows what they're dealing with, the client knows what they're dealing with. I think that's what we're supposed to be reaching toward, a statement. Whether it's in writing or an email or what is not the important point. We want this condensed down to a statement that can be dealt with in mediation or in a hearing. I think that's what we're after, is the statement.
I feel like may file a grievance would cover that. Does anybody have any other thoughts?
I think it should be
in writing.
In writing.
If I call up and complain over the telephone.
Yeah, but we have that though, don't we? Didn't we say
it doesn't hurt to have those
in writing?
In writing.
Yeah, I thought you were saying take rid of...
No, I didn't think we needed to add the word statement or anything.
Oh, any I'm sorry.
Defining word of grievance, I think.
Yeah. May file a grievance in writing. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Does that...
Just what I said. To be in writing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. So...
Very quick, Junior, and I think it is important that obviously it be in writing, obviously, whatever the format. I also think, given that it's going to be a state problem, and you don't want to include that in there as well, because if you put something in writing, you're right about it, you're obviously going to, put that
statement.
So I think you don't need the word statement.
Okay. Okay, so at this point we have the filing of the grievance in writing.
Yes.
File a grievance in writing. Okay. Does that speak to everybody's concern about that then?
Yes. All right. Do we need a motion or...
Do we have consensus on this language?
Yes.
Yes. Go for it.
Nichelle?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Is there a next thing?
Yes. And actually, this goes back to 003.04. I kept it to the last because it's quite lengthy. 304 is duration and termination of licenses. And we cover in 04A is a license may be terminated or suspended for any of the following reasons. And we have six different things listed in there. One issue that we have found it, as we looked at it further, is that we really need some clarification on some of that, and also we need to have some types of administrative action that can be administered based on unsatisfactory performance, so that it's not just you have your license, you don't have your license. There's some procedures that will be followed, so there it's not administered in an unfair way. So, let's see. The first part, the exact citations of the 00 whatever, I did not have time to get all the A, B's, and C's figured out. So if you would let us do that after the meeting, that would, and agree on whatever text we're going to have, that would be a great help. So the first part that we want to talk about is in 04A2. I'll just tell you, A1 is the license may be terminated or suspended based on improvement of vision so that the vendor no longer meets the definition of blindness. And then number two is extended illness with medically documented diagnosis of prolonged incapacity of the vendor to operate the facility in a manner consistent with the needs of the location or other available locations in the vending facility program. We would like that to read as follows. Failing to personally operate the assigned facility as set for in the permit or contract for any reason, unless approved in writing by the SLA, I'll just say that's State Licensing Agency. Extended illness of more than 30 days resulting in incapacity of the vendor to operate the vending facility will need to be documented and reviewed by the SLA Executive Director for possible reassignment of the facility. Incarceration for criminal charges shall be considered failure to operate a facility. Any unexplained absence for more than 5 days shall be considered as abandonment and failing to personally operate the assigned facility unless another person is covering the business and approved by the SLA. Any leave, sick, or vacation requires notification of the SLA to prevent consideration of abandonment. Now, some of that was obviously, it needs a little wordsmithing, but if we could talk about the content and what you think about that.
Okay, the bottom line is still the failure to be able to run the operation.
Yes.
And this added information is so that it's clear to everybody what we're talking about.
We have a comment in North Platte.
If I can answer to Barbara first. Okay. It's not just to be more clear, but to add in some specifics.
North Platte, your mic is on there.
So that it's more specific and more clear. The now, as it is, the only it doesn't address absence at all, other than the extended illness. And there are other factors that can occur that are, you know, really result in the incapacity of the vendor to operate that we don't even address, and we don't have language about or other absence or anything like that. Okay, that's my response to Barbara.
Okay, North Platte.
Oh.
5 days seems like an awfully short time to determine abandonment of the facility, especially in the case of serious illness. We had this situation once before, and that became a very confusing issue because the vendor could not get to the facility. He was, his health situation was so serious so rapidly that he couldn't call substitutes or do anything within 5 days. Within 30 days, he was back on the job. But that just seems like an awful short time, where in the vending program, we do have substitutes, or they used to have substitutes, that could cover for that vendor through the program in case of serious illness.
Yes, Stella, and the first part.
Yes, Stella, and the first part.
Can you mute that, North Platte? Thank you. Okay, the first part of this section does talk about the, you know, a failure to operate due to illness, and that goes up to 30 days, and it does allow for, you know, review by the director and that sort of thing. And because your point is definitely can be a problem for people. This part where it says any unexplained absence for more than 5 days shall be considered abandonment. So I think maybe the key there is unexplained absence. If a person isn't getting to their facility, somebody's going to be checking, and that doesn't mean you have to have a substitute in there within 5 days, but at least we need to know what was happening. And this also does not prevent us from, let's say at day eight, we finally find out they're, you know, in a coma in a small town they were visiting. Well, then obviously we'd work around that so that it would reflect back up to the part about medical issues and working with the agency and reviewing the situation. And
okay, Omaha.
Okay, Omaha. Yeah, what does the federal regulations, if there are any, say about unexplained absence in the vending program?
I have the regs here if you want me to look it up. I believe since this part was, well, let's see, no. Could I have, well, maybe I can find it real quick. I'll tell you what, my ability to find something in text doesn't work anymore because I'm so used to doing Control F. And I go right to what I need. And I haven't figured out how to do that visually yet. So
let's do it on your laptop.
I mean, when I'm looking at print. Yeah. And I don't think you have the Randolph Shepherd regs on print.
Oh, I might not.
I mean, in your laptop.
Now, this language does say, you know, a license may be terminated or suspended for any of the following reasons. And then these things are not. One of my problems is when things aren't written in parallel language, I have trouble with them. Improvement of vision so that they don't meet the definition. That one seems straightforward to me. If we go into that one, it seems less straightforward to me, partly because there are so many things wrapped up into
yes.
one thing, and I'm wondering if there would be a way of streamlining that so that we could have, you know, maybe unexcused absences is
that yes. it could be streamlined and it could be, it needs to be broken into specifics. That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
I didn't have time to do that before.
Yeah.
But in fact, it would need to be because you can see with all of the rule, they, you know, you break each little piece that's different into its own subsection or subsection.
But then we have withdrawal of the vendor from the program. Then we have evidence that the vendor doesn't meet one or more of the criteria. And then we have failure to submit required information on a monthly basis. And then we go into something that's still under that, but then it starts out, the Blind Vendors Committee may review inaccurate and late reports. To me, that doesn't follow.
Right, and in fact, that that one
doesn't seem to really be a license revocation thing until you get down further into it. And
right.
So it's
it is more in what I another part I want to read about administrative actions. That one would fit better in there.
It certainly would.
You're right.
Because it really doesn't. Because it talks about possible suspension, but this is but it's more of a, like you said, an administrative thing. And so I think we should, I mean, six doesn't belong
right
now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would submit that if we can get text we agree on, we can work on those details, and then it would become part of the public record and be out there at, you know, that would be for people to consider prior to the public hearing. Now, even though you've heard me say many times, if we get to the public hearing and there's big changes, we have to start over. I mean, we're trying to avoid that, but at the same time, if there's something important that should change, we're happy to start over. So, you know, if you can trust us to put it in the right sectioning with the comments you've made, and then if we mess something up at the hearing, then someone will tell us and we'll start over, and that's okay.
That's okay. Question in North Platte.
Okay.
Could you read the part about being incarcerated again?
Sure. Incarceration for criminal charges shall be considered failure to operate a facility.
Now, it seems to me if we're doing our ticking off of this list thing, if we have unexcused absences and then we have incarceration for whatever that is, I mean, that would certainly, I mean, if that is a reason to revoke a license, then it ought to be, it could be listed as one of these, in this whole big long list of things. Is that what you were looking for, North Platte, or something else?
Well, I just was kind of wondering, and maybe the two really are not as connected, but I was kind of wondering if that vendor is the breadwinner in the family, and in the Rehab Act we are providing services to families. I just didn't know if there's a conflict there.
I don't believe it's a conflict. Our services to families does not mean everything. I mean, it's things to services we can provide in working with the family to facilitate the rehabilitation of the person. But it doesn't mean that we will provide everything the family needs.
Also, I think, and maybe I'm following the train of thought in a derailed fashion, but if the implication is that a family member could operate the facility while someone is incarcerated, I believe that's illegal. The person operating a vending facility has to be a blind person.
Well,
I think.
Yes, except that when there is a need for a substitute or an emergency filling in of to cover the facility, to provide the service to the customers of that vendor, then it is allowable that on a temporary basis, that is, you know, it can be a non-blind person.
I wondered if it should state something like is found guilt, incarcerated and found guilty of charges. Because there would be a situation that someone could be arrested and charged and not have the funds to make bail and yet not be guilty.
Oh, I see where you're going now. I was off the track. Sorry.
Usually they say
you can be arrested without being guilty. You can be incarcerated without